Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
The Final Four night.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. Coming in to talk a little Duke news, fellas. It's kind of off-season here, but got some portal talk, got some departure talk, got some returners talk, fellas. So I figured we would probably start with the departures. Obviously, I want to start out, like, let's just shout out Malik Brown, graduate. So he's done, out of eligibility right now, but all academic team. Defensive player of the year here, fellas, like, gave us two great years, 70 wins, undefeated in Cameron. So, Shu, you were obviously there a lot of times, Raul as well, too. Y'all both covered him live. I saw media day here. Just let's give a little flowers to Malik. I mean, I don't know if you have a favorite game, favorite moment, or just what do you think that he brought to the Brotherhood? What's going to be your kind of lasting impression of Malik Brown?
Well, I mean, for me, just interacting with him, kind of soft-spoken guy, but yeah. Confident, you know, obviously loved playing here, and just played his ass off for us, you know, if we're being honest about it. I mean, you know, played with that hurt shoulder for as long as he could last year, you know, and a favorite moment. I mean, I don't know if, you know, some of those plays he made in the Carolina game this year. I mean, I'm thinking back to just frustrating Janai Broom in the Auburn game last year, you know, getting under Hunter Dickinson's skin in the game with Kansas and Vegas. Like, he was good at that kind of stuff. You know, I just did everything for us. So, you know, just a star role player, I guess, you know, a star in his role. And shouts to him for that.
Yeah, I mean, he's an incredibly selfless team player, sometimes to a fault, where you wish he would have asserted his offense a little bit more. The Carolina game was what jumped out to me, that, you know, that's just kind of top of mind because it happened fairly recently. And I think it was probably his best game at Duke, you know, 15 points on 6-9 shooting, 5 steals, A block, you know, a couple assists, 10 rebounds, just a really spectacular all-around performance in a game where Duke was down two guys and really needed him to step up. You know, he was instrumental in that second half run, him and Dame Sarr. I mean, just a joy to watch for me. He was one of my favorite players to watch this year. At times, my favorite, just because he's, like I've said to you guys, like he's like a magician on defense. Like some of the stuff he did just didn't even make any sense.
Yeah. And really, man, like the Carolina game this year at home, senior night, obviously. But the one at UNC last year.
Big threes down the stretch.
He comes in, the moment he comes in, he gets that deflection, two big threes down the stretch. Yeah, man. Yeah, some big time blocks this year as well too. Yeah, man. If they install a fifth year rule, would love to have. We'll talk about some of the additions and some of the potentials coming up. But if you could get Malik back, man, would absolutely take that guy back. So shout out to Malik. Obviously, hit the classroom, hit the books hard too. So all academic, you know, going places there. But I guess we'll segue to fellas. We'll talk a little Slim here. We'll give him some flowers. So Slim just declared for the draft, kind of as expected. There was a little, you know, maybe just the way that season ended and just, you know, some of that there. He probably had kind of visions of it definitely not happening like that. So, and, you know, he's probably projected somewhere in the, you know, late lottery to 17 to 15 to 25 range, I would imagine somewhere in that role. So there's money to be made there. McCain was what, 22nd or something, y'all, right?
He was somewhere. Mm-hmm. McCain was 16th.
16th, yeah.
16th. Okay, yeah. So yeah.
I think it's like 22nd recruit was, coming in, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was thinking of, or maybe projected or whatever it was. But so there's a role. There's a role there. There's a really big role there. So he's moving on, fellas. We'll do the same thing we just did with Malik here. Kind of what's your kind of lasting impressions of Slim and the Brotherhood?
Yeah, man, I thought he had a really good season for us. You know, started off maybe a little bit slow, was not hitting his threes out of the gate. But then as ACC play rolled around, he really just took it up a notch and was hyper efficient from that point on. You know, again, like maybe just still a little bit more up and down than I was hoping for, but had some monster games. Toward the end of the season, I thought he was especially great. The ACC tournament, we don't win that without him having two huge scoring games there. So I really enjoyed watching him this season. I thought he diversified his game, you know, became more than just a three-point shooter, was able to attack the rim a lot. His defense improved tremendously, rebounded better. I think he had a couple double-digit rebound games towards the end of the year as well. So, you know, it's one of those things where you think if he had come back, he probably puts everything together and has like an All-American type season, but you also understand why he's leaving, right? Like, let's say he goes 25th. He's going to end up on a really good team like Boston or OKC or something. And in that could be like a perfect situation for him where he gets to do what he does best, you know, just come off screens, firing off the bench or whatever.
Yeah, I just would add, like, to Roll's point, like, you know, last year we saw him as kind of a microwave scorer guy off the bench, right? Like, obviously the Auburn game, he comes in at 6 threes and a half. But this year, again, like Roel mentioned, diversifying his game. I mean, when he attacked the basket, a lot of times he went up there like
lots of dunks, some
authority. Yeah, a lot of dunks. So, you know, just a good kid all around. I liked his swagger. I liked his confidence. You know, I thought he really worked his tail off to be the kind of equal guy on the defensive side this year. I thought he's, you know, held his own a lot. I mean, he blocked a lot of shots from the perimeter, as many as I can remember a wing or a guard ever blocking. So didn't lose in Cameron, won two ACC tournaments. So, you know, kudos to him for everything he did. I hope he finds the success that he's looking for in the next level. Again, like you guys said, at that spot, maybe he goes to a better team and it's a better situation than, say, going 13th to the Blazers or somebody where you know.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part of it, of like, you know, it's not really a case of you can come back and go higher. because I think that he's probably always going to have been drafted off of what he did last year, really, right? Like, that's the real threat. Like, can we get a guy that can just be a 47% three-point sniper, like, off movement, like, that kind of gravity off our bench, got good size? You throw some of the stuff that he did this year, and I think it, you know, it solidifies, okay, we can maybe give him, like, actual real minutes, and, like, maybe he could see the floor in a playoff game. But I don't think it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you come back, we can get you in the top five or top 10. I just don't know if that was there for him, really. But
you don't, I mean, he wasn't going to come back and suddenly be just crossing up guys left and right or making bullet passes, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. The weight was more of like, if you come back, if this is like that, if that's something you really want, if you come back, you are the guy at Duke.
Yeah.
If that's what you want, like, that was there for you. Blackwell doesn't come, obviously, if that happens, right? And it's like you have Slim in that spot, and then he is kind of your de facto. Maybe you don't give him the JJ treatment, but, like, he's up in that level of, like, echelon of guard type usage, probably, right? Like,
there's something to be said of that, though. I don't know if you guys listened to the basketball from today, but Gary Parish was kind of talking about that. Like, there's two main leagues that Americans watch basketball, the NBA and high division one college basketball, right? Well, in the NBA, most of these kids say, you know, they're coming up through grassroots. When you get into the NBA level, it's once you leave your college team, it's probably the last time you're the best player on any team, right? Unless you're LeBron, unless Steph, KD, you're not going to go be the man on some pro team. Right. Whereas college, what you just pointed to, Isaiah, I mean, he could come back and
you could have been that. That's what you want.
You are that. You're going to be the best player on the team. You know, Thomas Hauck just returned to Florida, even though he was looking like he might be a lottery pick. You know, but maybe that's just kind of what he's looking for. Let me be the man, the big man on campus one more time. You know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're one of the most well-known people in the entire community, versus being in the NBA and essentially being anonymous because you're the 13th guy, or maybe you're going down to the G League for a while, you know. So it's, and again, there is some probably allure for some of these guys to averaging 20 points per game and getting awards and stuff like that versus, again, just grinding it out at the end of the bench.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like I'm not hating on him for it for any reason whatsoever. But it's, you know, I think that it's worth pointing out that, like, those were the pulls. Maybe that's why it took to this point to finally make that decision.
It's not as clear cut as it is for a guy like Cam, right?
Right. Especially because now it's not like a decision of like, oh, he really needed to go to take care of his family. Well, I'm sure he was doing okay pretty much here too.
Yeah, I'm sure Blackwell's making plenty of money, right? So,
I
would have gone to Slim.
You know, and obviously the fault depends on where he falls in the draft. I mean, I've seen him, you know, I don't take mocks for much, but I've seen him anywhere from 13 to 25. If he's more in that 25 range, I mean, I'm sure we could have gave him, you know, something equal or maybe a little bit more than what he would be earning.
Yeah, 25 is like $2.5 million or something like that. Yeah. So,
right. We might maybe get a claim close to not doubling it, but you never know, never know.
I just mentioned real quick, one of the things that I'll remember about Slim this year is not necessarily some of the on-court stuff, but that clip, I think it was the halftime locker room of the Michigan game?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah, that was huge.
That's worth pointing out that he did, like, improve his leadership as well. And that's definitely a big thing. I don't think it's just a question of, like, can he make more money at Duke this year versus in the NBA this year? There is also other stuff to weigh, like, getting to the NBA sooner gets you to that second contract sooner and stuff like that. And you don't have injury risk. And so there are other factors to weigh.
For sure.
You know,
getting on a good team potentially and like getting, you know, getting developed and
And also you had your heart broken twice, you know, it's like, maybe it's just time.
Yeah. You put it in there. You came back, you went for it again. It's like, all right, it just didn't, it wasn't there. There's no gear. I mean, in this type of tournament, y'all, like there's no guarantee.
I mean, even if we return Isaiah and Cam, are we guaranteed to win a national championship? No,
like, not at all. You're still probably at best, like maybe you have a 25% chance. And that's like really, really high in a single game, six game tournament. Like that's, So, you know, it happens, right? So best of luck to Slim. Hope he kills it. Hope he lands somewhere great. So wanted to give him a little shout out. Cam hasn't announced yet, fellas, but let's, for all just intents and purposes here, we're going to assume that a top three pick is going to go to the draft, you know, big shocker. So we'll give him a little bit of flowers. Obviously, all of the player of the year accolades, we've kind of already given Cam a ton of flowers. Maybe the most consistent player, consistent freshman for sure, that Duke has ever had in terms of just every single game showing up in so many ways. Followed up from Cooper Flagg, and you get Cam Boozer. Like, that's just special stuff. Not going to have that next year. Going to have a lot of different pieces and maybe the deepest team we've had in quite a while potentially, but not going to have a guy like that per se. So shouts to Cam again. You know, 70 wins in these 2 years is something else, but obviously he got 35 of them, but just a big time player. Obviously continue the Boozer lineage here. So, you know, if you wanted to run it back, we'll take you. We'll take you, Cam, gladly. You know, we can start a GoFundMe right now. If that's, you know, you tell us the number and we'll see if we can get it done. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume this guy's out of here. You know, shake his hand, congratulate him, top three pick, maybe a number one pick, who knows. But fellas, just, you know, shoot, you asked him. Again, we go back to this all season. You asked him, was this the Duke game? They had a shot at it. They had a
shot.
Damn good shot at it. Didn't quite make the cut, but he's up there. He's up there.
It's up there. I mean, he's up there personally for me.
Sure.
I mean,
he's up there, yeah.
Like you said, regardless if we want to break it down by best freshman ever, just best Duke season ever. I mean, you got to think that season's colossal.
Yeah.
You know, just what he did in terms of all across the board for us. And again, as you pointed out, night in and night out. I mean, you are getting something from Cam every time he laced them up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't judge individual seasons by the end of the season and whether or not they won a title, right? Like, I don't think any Wake Forest fan is going to say that Tim Duncan wasn't the greatest player to go through that program, despite the fact that he never made it past the Elite Eight.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Cam was, he was special, man. Even the two games that he wasn't that great, he was still pretty daggone good, you know? Like, well, I mean, I think, you know, we'll give a random shout out here, but I think M said it right. Like, even my greatest hits are your biggest flops, or something. My biggest flops are your greatest hits, right? That's an M. So, I mean, that's Cam right there. Like, when he doesn't
imagine if Javon Delorier had put up Cam's worst game,
right?
That would have been the best game in Javon's career by a mile.
J Rob literally did it, and I thought we could win a title.
Yep.
I was like, oh god, this is it. But yeah, so shouts to him, man. Hate that he didn't get to experience a Final Four. Like, that kid deserved a Final Four. He was a warrior. I mean, he's got the wolf on his
still got the scar. Yeah, like
his eyes all puffed up, man. Gonna miss that guy. Hell of a kid. Hell of a dude. Go kill it, guy. All right, fellas, let's do a quick kind of like segue here. We'll jump into our returners, and then we'll take a little quick break. I'm not gonna do it quite in order, but I think I'm going to do it in my personal order, so y'all can just kind of deal with that, I guess, if you want. But we're going to start with Caleb Foster, because this guy is Duke at this point. Like, you can critique his game, and I've done that myself. I will probably continue to do that. But for right now, it's like the acknowledgement of like the person, and just like, you don't get this much at all. In fact, John Shire's never gotten it. This Caleb will be his first actual true senior, which is just kind of incredible too. But for this kid to come back, to double down on it, to not run from it, to not be guaranteed anything, even after the season he just had, even after St. John's, to know Caden Boozer's in this backcourt, John Blackwell's in this backcourt, Deron Rippey's in this backcourt, Caleb Foster's also in this backcourt, right? And like, this is a senior who has been through it, and like, you can't count that out. I know people are willing to pin someone into a six man, and I think that would be a great role for him, but this kid's gonna fight for starter minutes. Like, y'all don't get this thing twisted here. Like, I'm glad Caden's back, and I'm glad we got Ron too, but like, a Foster Blackwell backcourt is pretty appealing to me as well. So like, I think that's in the cards. Like, the competition will be there. But before, let's not really get into that for now, but just let's talk about Caleb Foster. Let's give some flowers to him for coming back. I mean, we didn't have captains last year. If I'm John, or not if I am John, but I hope John, like John, if you're listening to this, like, let's put the C.
Put the C on C on
CFOS. Right there for CFOS, man. He's your first returning senior. Like, this is the guy, man. Like, this is, he is the culture. He is the Nolan Smith. He is the Quinn Cook. He is now him for us. Mm-hmm. So shouts to CFOS, man. Love you. Glad you're back. Y'all can go in and jump in where you want here. But yeah, let's chop it up.
Well, I mean, for me, again, having a lot of interaction with him. As a matter of fact, I kind of think back to my first day really covering for Duke. I showed up, I walk into where the Duke Museum is, and I'm trying to find the media room. I have no idea. And CFOS is just sitting on the stairs there, and I'm like, hey, Caleb, man, you know where the media room is? He's like, oh, yeah, let me take you down there. And, like, takes me the back, like, through all the doors. He's unlocking all the doors. I'm like, okay, this is cool. So, and look, the kid's also the city I was born in, Harrisburg.
Yeah.
He's from Harrisburg. So, can't say I've ever had a hometown Duke player. So, he's going to be one of my favorites because of that. But because of this coming back, I mean, that just shoots him into like an all-time category for me. I mean, you just don't get that in this day and age, the kind of loyalty that you got out of that. Like, there will be no CFOS slander around me at
all.
We
might even link his NIL page right on this podcast, because it's like, I'm about to buy a shirt or something. I'm there. Like, let me get a jersey. Let me get a shirt. Let me get some swag. Like, I'm all in. I'm all in. Go ahead.
I saw somebody suggest on a message board, like, why don't we kind of organize, like, all buying his jersey and showing up one night? Like, just if we can get, like, 50 people together to do that, like, for senior night or something, to just all show up with
freaking, I wish it was UNC, but, I'm almost glad that it's not
takes UNC, the pressure off a little bit, right?
And it gets to be truly like, let's just go murder Wake Forest.
Hopefully it's just Wake Forest.
Let's just go murder Wake Forest. God, we love to talk about Wake. But let's go do that. And let's get the Grayson Allen type, like, Caleb make it halftime. Like, I want all of that. He deserves it, dude. We should totally do that. Let's talk about it here. Everyone go buy some CFOS merch. Let's put that out there. Let's show up for this kid, man. Like, if he's going to bleed it, let's bleed it with him.
It's different now, right, where players see the revenue from the merch. So it's like, not only can you have the name on the jersey, but they're actually seeing the proceeds.
Yeah, he's getting the guts from it, man. He's bled this thing. He's bled it. So
I'm glad you brought up that anecdote shoe, because that was like the first thing I was just thinking about. Like, oh yeah, that was Shoe's first media experience. And I always thought that spoke to his character, like the fact that he just went 10 minutes out of his way to walk a stranger.
I mean, he could have just said, hey, go down this and this and this, but he was like, oh, well, come on. And like, literally took me through all the locked doors that only he and the guys can get through. Right.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Last thing here, fellas, I think we were talking about it offline a little bit, but, Batty has 131 wins. Right. And so Caleb Foster right now, I'm going to count all of them, because we just talked about how committed he was and that he is Duke. So, like, even if he was hurt, even if he didn't play in that game, I'm giving him, he was on that team.
He's on the team. He's practicing.
Yeah. I'm giving it to him. So he is at 97 wins. Betty is at 131. Duke hits 34 wins. He ties it. If he hits 35, he had to hit 35 three times, which is pretty insane. He hits 35, he holds that record, which then qualifies you for one of the Duke's criteria is that you have to either win National Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, or break a school record or break an NCAA record. Well, most wins would technically break a school record. Could CFOS be the next jersey that hangs in this roster?
I mean, we'd have to win a title, right? I mean, I guess that kind of baked in.
You'd have to do what you did just now. You'd have to be 35-3 and lose in a heartbreaking and that would just, you'd have to give it to him at that point if that happens again. Like,
I think winning a title would make it a lot easier of a decision, especially if he's like Final Four MOP or something,
Even if he's not, like, at that point, like, he got a title. It's John's first too. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I just don't know how many more 4-year guys, like, unless we change the criteria around, you know, the graduation and stuff like that, which I don't.
You can graduate honestly, in three, but like you'd have to, yeah. I mean, how many really good dudes are going to put up enough to break a record or something in three?
In 3 years. Yeah. Now, sure, you know, look, and this is not a slight to CFOS, would his name look a little different up there besides, you know, beside a Dawkins and a Grant Hill and a Hurley and a Leitner?
Absolutely, it would. It would.
Sure. You know, but to your point, like, I mean, he is Duke, man. I mean, yes, that's what it is right there.
Yeah, you have to honor it in some way. Because at the same time, you couldn't, like, okay, so, like, what if Blackwell comes in and it gets, like, National Player of the Year? You're going to hang his jersey? Like, you can't do that. Dude played 3 years at Wisconsin, right? Like, you could retire that. Yep. So it's, I don't know how they're going to do that. And I don't even know if you would, I really take a lot of pride, y'all, in, like, not honoring jerseys just because that road, that school, you know, down the road does that.
Yeah, you
but you... You got to do something for CFOS here, right? We got to give him some. Maybe it's in the Hall of Fame or something like, you know, whatever it is. Maybe he takes over the Brotherhood podcast. We'll get him on something. Maybe he's the correspondent, like whatever. We're all in on CFOS, clearly. Yeah. So, you know what, fellas? I was going to go into the next one, but, you know, we're already probably about 25 minutes in here. Yeah. Let's take a quick little time out here, fellas. Let's pay some bills. We'll come back. We'll talk about Pat. We'll talk about CBass. Briefly mention Dame, then we'll do some portal talk.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
All right, fellas, let's get back into it a little bit. The next guy we should talk about is Big Pat. Shout out to men's basketball for the Big Pat, Big Back type of thing. There's a little bit going on with Twitter with that of the Big Back. As a Big Back member myself, I appreciate that noise. So I will take that. But this is massive. You know, I don't know what Flory got paid. There's a lot of talk about the Flory stuff, a lot of, that's why we don't do the portal stuff, y'all. We just don't really, once you're here, you're here. And I'm down, let's ride, let's go, I'm all in. But like, it's such a fickle game. We just don't do it. But you get Big Pat back, year three, here at Duke, probably is going to graduate this year if he wants to. I mean, the kid by all accounts is really smart. But not more than that, you get your high-low guy. You get a guy that can play the four, the five, wherever you need him. He's gotten better every single year. A little bit of health marks, and we can talk about some of the additions and the depth of the roster here in a little bit. But clearly, you know, if y'all, I don't know if y'all saw the tweet by Evan Mia, but like there was like four guys that met the criteria that Pat did last year. And it was like Cam Boozer, Yaxel Lindenborg, and I forget the other guy on there.
Maybe Joshua Jefferson.
Josh Jefferson. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so he's in that level. Like when he was available, and we knew that, we talked about that. It was pretty obvious at the end of the season that Duke was not the Duke that we had seen in late January, early February, or even all through February, early March, really. Yep. They just weren't the same. So Pat has that level of impact. We know what he's capable of. Year three, traditionally at Duke, for our younger fans, maybe have not stuck around quite as much, but typically, traditionally at Duke, year three is like the year. Like that was always, like when I was coming up, it was like year three, you go back to Daniel Ewing, you go back to Nolan Smith, you go back to Gerald Henderson. Like it was just this year three, something magical happens. And so now you get year three of Pat. He's back in the system. You get the maturity. You get the body toned up even more. It's all there for him. Fellas, how excited were y'all to hear you got your big guy back?
I think for me, like, I guess you would say Caleb coming back might have the biggest culture impact and emotional impact. But as an on-court impact, I think Pat is the biggest that we're going to get. You know, and that's even if Sar comes back. Pat, to me, was probably, it depends on how you want to gauge it. Maybe Isaiah was in there, but Pat was either our second or third most important player last season. And to get him back when big men were such a hot commodity, you know, in the transfer portal market is just massive, right? And I think it just changes the entire outlook of the team. Like, look down the road to Carolina, right? Their entire offseason hinges on whether Visar comes back or not. Having that kind of like defensive anchor, passing big man who can also score in the post is just, you can kind of shape your entire team around that. Like Blackwell will probably end up being Duke's leading scorer, but I could see Pat being the most important player.
Yeah.
But you look back on last year, like the Evan Mia, like three-man teams or whatever they would do. Like, Pat was in, like, all of our best three-man lineups, right?
Right, yep.
So that kind of hints to what he gives you. You know, obviously, from a shot-blocking perspective or a little bit of a rim protection, showed that he can step out and shoot the three. Didn't shoot a bunch this year, but he made, you know, knocked down a couple of them. You know, his passing is his passing, but I think my favorite thing about Pat is he just don't take off anybody, man. I mean,
Yeah,
you know, he's kind of, I wouldn't call him an enforcer, but he's like, you know, he likes to muck it up. He likes to do what he does down there. He gets into a lot of scrums. I mean, I'm sure he got, I don't know how many technical fouls he got or got some guy to call.
Right.
That he had due. Yeah. So it's awesome to have Pat back. I mean, for one, just again, going back to my time covering these guys, it's hard to be in a bad mood around Pat, man. I mean, he's just got this big infectious smile. Like you can tell that he's always in a good mood, having a good time. It's nice to have big Pat back.
I think that's what infuriates opponents the most, right? Is that he's jostling with you and elbowing you while also having that big grin on his face.
Yeah.
Must be infuriating. I think he's going to have a massive third season, and I think it's actually going to benefit him with the NBA too. I think it was just a smart decision all around, right? Sam Vecenie had a tweet about it, like, yeah, you could kind of see it heading in this direction. Like, after he got that injury this year, NBA teams started to have some real concern, right? Just looking at the history. I think had he stayed healthy all year, he'd be gone, because he was projected kind of like 10 to 14 earlier in the year. But just having that another foot injury, you know, and that, of course, raises some concerns for us, right? Like, can he come back and really stay healthy for a full season and be able to play like 25 to 30 minutes to have the level of impact we know he can have, right? And if he does get injured, what's the pivot there? Because we've got, you know, Sharnowski coming in from Belmont, who we'll talk about in a second, but there's not a lot of like true center play beyond that.
Yeah. So
But
yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a concern, the injury thing, because I mean, it dates back to high school when you're only playing, you know, 40 games, just like in college, right? When the next level, you're doubling that, right? So,
So, and you're hoping that with that, it's better conditioning in year three, right? It's like, okay, you went from year one was, and year one was kind of a rehab year for him coming out of the high school situation too. And so then you had this happen in year two. But I also think that it may be a little bit overblown because it was like, well, I mean, he was healthy for like 34 games here, y'all, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, he was fine. Now I go, the hand was taped up, but he was still delivering. He was still the guy that was on all of these charts and on all these metrics. It just so happened at the absolute worst time. And it kind of dragged on for whatever reason there. And you're hoping maybe in year three that we can improve that a little bit. Or, you know, as we're going to talk about the depth, the roster around it, maybe you can insulate it a little bit better as well.
And maybe there's some sort of off-season surgery he can have too.
Or something like that. Yeah. Or some kind of conditioning program.
Rehab,
or
just something to strengthen that foot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we got rid of all the cramping issues all of a sudden, right? Like,
we've somehow figured that out. So, yeah. So
we'll figure this out.
The next guy, I guess we'll talk a little bit about Seabass here. So Sebastian Wilkins is announced his return, so he is back as well here. Not sure if that's a surprise. I think if Nick would decide to come back, then maybe that creates a bit of a log jam and you see something different happen. But you know, you had a guy that comes in that's redshirted and now he's back. I think the whole situation was a little just unsure, you know, he comes in a year early, then redshirts, and then does. And so it's like, okay, well, maybe you get something here. I don't know exactly where my expectations are. We'll talk about that probably here in a couple months, fellas, when we get a little bit more kind of data here. But you put it in right now, that's another kind of forward body that you have. Is another guy that's been in the system for a year that's practiced against some big-time players last year, can maybe give you some minutes at the three, at the four, maybe not the five, but like at the 3-4, 4-3, that kind of role here. Any surprise for y'all that Seabass is running this thing back?
I mean, a bit, right? You know,
A little bit.
Yeah. I guess, you know, when to start last year, we, you know, and look, in every offseason, we're always, oh, we're 10 deep, whatever. And we know it's not ever really going to shake out that way. But, you know, just get the reports that maybe he wasn't quite there yet, so that they were going to redshirt him. You just have to kind of wonder, like, how is that going to carry over to next year? Is he going to stick around and, you know, maybe be in this kind of same boat where he's at the end of the rotation. But, you know, for him to come back, bet on himself. And obviously, John's, you know, trying to get this culture of, like, competition that's big with John is, like, you know, we want guys to come in and fight for their minutes and earn their minutes. And that's going to ultimately make us a better team. Proof's been in the pudding the last 2 years, too. I mean, with 70 wins. So he's got a good thing going, and hopefully Seabass can kind of contribute what he can for us this year.
And nothing else, he likes the culture, which, hey, we'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, he did a lot of media interviews this season, Duke Blue Planet stuff, so seemed to have fun doing that. You know, you hope it goes a little bit better for him than it did for guys like Darren Harris or Jaden Shute or Christian Reeves, who, like, really were trying to break into the rotation and just couldn't quite do it and then ended up transferring out. And no shot to any of those guys. I wish them all well. But, you know, I mean, there's clearly a role for him if he's, you know, if he's up to it, basically. I don't know a better way to put it than that. But, like, we need bodies in the front court there, you know. We got Pat. We got Drew Chernowski. We've got Cam Williams. But Cam Williams is, what, 190 pounds at almost 7 feet tall? So there's going to be some question marks there. So Sebastian Wilkins could provide maybe a little bit more physical presence than that. I like his athleticism and length, and I do think he can give us something that somebody else might not be able to. So we'll see. But
yeah,
it's just cool. Do you know? I mean, I think having this many returners year in and year out, except that 1 year where we cleared house, I think does speak to the kind of culture John Shire has created. Guys want to come back, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly evolved this thing year after year. And I really hope we get him on later in the summer. We've had him on all three seasons or all four offseasons so far. So hopefully that will continue. Because I think this is his most impressive kind of roster construction based on what we thought. I mean, we're all ready to kind of admit that, like, oh, we might have blown our shot here a little bit. This might be a little bit of a down year. He's reloaded, which, as you should. This is Duke. The resources should be there, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but the question was, like, what are you going to do when the high school classes aren't generational, right?
Right, exactly.
And you don't have the like, Cam Boozer, the
you don't have the National Player of the Year
exactly.
that you just
exactly.
pulled Cooper Flagg, right?
And so I think that's the segue. I want to save the Dame talk. I mean, we're thinking that he's probably going to be back here, but let's let him have his moment. We'll let him have his time, y'all. But you've talked about it. Let's jump right into the Blackwell stuff, because that's the piece where we haven't really went into the portal for that, right? We went into the portal for some great role players. We went into the portal for some multi-year guys. We have not went into the portal for a guy that scores 19 plus a game that could literally be Duke's leading scorer next season. I mean, maybe even projects to be that. Now John has said, nope, we're going to go out and do that. And they bring in John Blackwell. He's a junior. He was a junior, incoming senior, played 3 years at Wisconsin, 6'4", big time scorer. I mean, for y'all, like, this was a bit of surprise. I mean, I know it was talked about and it kept coming, but the portal stuff to me, I just really can't mess with it a ton. But, and then it really got some legs. And then now it's here and boom, he's on the roster and here we go. I was a little surprised that it's like, oh, okay, we haven't really seen this yet. We went out and we did that. Where are y'all at with this level of kind of portal addition? I mean, we're looking at maybe the number one portal class and the number one high school class coming into Duke next year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the portal era, we haven't done this. We've had some transfer, like Seth Curry came in from Liberty. Roddy Hood coming in and lighting it up,
right.
But not in the portal era. So 2 years ago, I think even John kind of talking with us was kind of like, you know, our key guys are always going to be coming from the high school ranks. I think the portal is just going to be used for like those fill-in roles, those role player roles. But obviously with Slim, moving on, there's a need for, we need a bucket getter. We need somebody that's a bona fide scorer, and that's what this guy does. I haven't saw a lot of his highlights, but I know just looking back through his game log, like he had huge games against some really stout Big Ten competition last year. So that makes me feel a little bit better about going into the next season with a guy like that suiting up for us. Now, I don't know if you guys noticed the jersey he was rocking in the photo shoot. Is he about to don the 25?
Oh, I didn't even look at that. Surely not, right? But
I mean, we did let Mark Mitchell wear it too, so.
That's true. Yeah, whatever, I guess, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point that dam has been broken or whatever, right? It's like we've already gone down that road, so if it happens again, whatever. I mean, to your point, Shu, like, he had some massive games for Wisconsin where they upset some of the top teams in the country. Wisconsin was a good but not amazing team. You know, they lost in the first round to High Point, but they had some of the most impressive wins in the country, right? Michigan, I think they beat Illinois. They beat
in the Big Ten tournament. Yep.
Yeah. They beat MSU. They might have even beat Purdue as well. They did. They had a collection of like really great wins, and he was pretty good in all of those. And even the High Point game, you can't blame him for the loss. When you look at his stats in that, he was great.
Yeah.
So
he had the bad inbounds at the end, which people are.
Yeah. That's a Duke tradition.
And his clutch stats are apparently not super great, but I do think that there is something to be said for getting a big game player. And he is a senior and you're bringing that in. I also want to plug before we kind of like move on here too, if you haven't yet, if you're listening to this by the time this comes out, but you should go to thedevilton.com. You should read Brian Geisinger's article on John Blackwell that he just dropped over there. He'll probably drop on Substack in a couple of days too. But really in depth, three-level score. You're bringing a guy in who is, you know, he's 39% on, excuse me, on 7 attempts a game. Per 100 possessions, though, he's up to 10 attempts a game. So that is your Isaiah Evans replacement, which is a little bit kind of confusing as to why the majority of the pitch was to get him on the ball. We'll see a little bit what that looks like. I mean, I guess Slim was on the ball a little bit too, but...
I will say he's a better off-the-dribble shooter than Isaiah Evans is, right? Isaiah Evans was mostly like a catch-and-shoot guy. Isaiah Evans is the better movement shooter, but... Blackwell is clearly a guy who can pull up with the defender in his face in a way that Isaiah Evans couldn't. Another thing that Brian Gesinger article mentioned was he shoots like 48% from the corners. We know Duke is great at generating corner threes, so that'll be a big thing too.
Yeah, I think he was like 70% at wide open threes. Like,
or it was like I was with JJ on lockdown earlier, and he was saying that I think he pulled the stat that he's 67% on catch and on open catch and shoot threes.
Open catch and shoot three.
This kid's shooting six, and we've already said that he's shooting 10 threes per 100 possessions. You bring that kind of gravity in, and John Shire clearly prefers that. You brought a Derek Whitehead in, and he was hurt, but I think that like he was probably that guy that you wanted to do that for. Jared McCain was obviously that guy that you got that out of. Con Knipple was that guy that you got that out of.
Brian had a list of guys. Yeah, it was like every year John has had a guy at over 10 attempts per 100 possessions at over 35%, right?
There you go.
And with most of them being like 40%.
2 years ago, we generated the most wide open three. I don't know if last year we did.
2 years ago we did, yeah.
2 years ago we did.
But we're still up near the top last year, I believe. And we've always been good at generating the corner threes, which are the best threes in the sport. So
Well, in the spirit of plugging, you know, the Devils, I would like to say, you know, obviously Brian, check out his article. But if you're not subscribed to the boards and you're, you know, a certified junkie like we are, and just want to get as much Duke stuff, I mean, the boards are great. I don't know, you guys peruse them all the time. This stuff about Blackwell was popping up on the boards like back in January. There was a little smoke to this. Now, I don't know if you guys are aware, but he shares the same agent as Cedric Coward. Yeah. Maybe, you know, we lost on that fish last year, but his agent threw us a little bit of a
Cedric Coward even like acknowledged it on Instagram or something too.
Yep. So, I think it's pretty cool that Coward was like excited for him to commit to Duke, despite the fact that Coward didn't play a game for Duke. So.
Yeah. Got to shout out the boards, man, too. They were on it, you know, a couple of days ago where it's like, hey, we don't expect any more transfers coming out. And here we are, right? So, we'll endorse that here, too. So. Yeah,
and while I did think it was a little bit strange that Blackwell talked about, you know, playing some point guard, one thing that he did say several times that I liked was it seemed really important to him to transfer to a place where he had the ability to win championship. To me, it doesn't seem like it was about having the biggest role possible. It's like he's been at Wisconsin 3 years and they haven't been close to a title, right? So I think that was a huge part in his decision here.
Yeah. And he wants to get to the NBA. And it's like, okay, well, if you want to get to the NBA and you want to win titles, there's a couple programs out there. Duke's not the only one. I think we're right up there, but I mean, it's Duke, it's a UConn, maybe it's a Michigan. I get there's a few here, right? A few, and some of those others, Michigan might just be a little recency here. Like, I don't know how much really trust factor that really generates, but I think Danny, obviously, you know, Duke, Calipari, they can get you maybe in that conversation. But you come here, you get an opportunity to really compete, to really go after it, to play not just for a championship and for the NBA, but to play with NBA players, really. I mean, we're going to have guys that are going to be in that league with you.
That's the other thing. I'll be interested to see, like, can his efficiency even improve at Duke, just having more talent around him, right? And then also another thing I wanted to point out was the shot selection element. At Wisconsin, he took 110 long twos. The player who took the most long twos on Duke last year was Isaiah Evans, with 60. So he took 50 more at Wisconsin. I have to think that's going to be cleaned up, right? And that's just an automatic boost to your efficiency if you start taking more threes and layups.
Yeah, because he did not dunk at all.
No,
it was kind of like he was not doing a whole lot of rim stuff. So I think that's going to be definitely more of a priority here. Fellas, I feel like we got to talk about our first, and I'm not going to say this with any shade whatsoever, because it's completely different situations. But last year we lost Jay and he took Shelton with him. This year we lose Evan and he throws us a little assist. So our first kind of developmental project here a little bit coming from Coach Brad's. Appreciate you, big guy. In the form of Drew Sharnowski. So a 6'9 sophomore incoming junior, started 24 games for a 26-6 Belmont team. The more I look at this guy, the more I like him. And maybe it's because I'm willing to ignore the things that he doesn't do well, because like when you throw him into Duke's system, I mean, this guy played like 22 minutes at Belmont. So like, what is the real expectation, right? But if you're looking at like, hey, I need a third or a fourth big in the tournament to play a Michigan, to play an Arizona, and I want to bring physicality off my bench. Hornets just got decimated by Orlando. And I just listened to the Busby podcast and they were talking about, we don't have enough physicality. And that's like, how do you address that? You go get a guy like Drew Sharnowski, who like probably not going to start for you and it's not going to shoot well for you and you don't want him at your line, but he led their conference in block percentage. And like, he's a 6'9 athlete. He dunks everything. Yep. He's going to hit the boards for you. He's 70%. He's a paint finisher. So 70% in the paint, like from two, like he's going to dunk. He's going to finish down there for you. He had a 22% assist rate as well. So you also have some kind of passing out of this situation. I'm kind of all in. I mean, he's top five in offensive rebound percentage, defensive rebounding percentage. I love this pickup, man, as just a not like I have a low threshold expectation, but like for that role, like if you're replacing Malik Brown with Drew Sharnowski, I am all in with that. Like that is a great role for him. And I think he can really give you some rim pressure with all of these guards that you have. Where y'all at with Drew, man? And maybe I'm not too high on him.
No, I'm right there with you. I mean, it was the Missouri Valley Conference Defensive Player of the Year. I think John sees him as a one-to-one replacement to Malik. Now, I don't know if I necessarily think that, because I think Malik's perimeter defense is what kind of made him a little bit more space.
Yeah, it's just the role, right? It's the kind of defensive energy physicality specialist.
I think this guy's going to be
a
better rim protector, paint protector than Malik.
Yeah.
But obviously not the perimeter defender that he was. But again, I mean, just, and look, I don't know a lot about him other than watching his highlights, but highlights have me turned up. I mean, this guy goes in,
dunks everything, man.
Lefty, righty, two-handed, doesn't matter.
He's got some like high school coop kind of like highlights where he's just coming from weak side throwing stuff, and it's like, I'm not saying he's coop, like that's not what this is, but maybe he's our next kind of freak athlete white guy that comes in here and it's just like, yo, come catch a body. Our Grant Nelson.
Birdman.
He's our Grant
Birdman
Nelson,
light. Right? Birdman light.
Yeah. Our non-shooting Grant Nelson. Yeah. Birdman light. I like that.
Get him a little tattoo across the neck.
Yeah.
He's got that kind of like the Cooper like gorilla dunk thing that he does.
Yeah,
I mean, where he just dunks like
kind of like.
Yeah. Like clearly like really like pretty long wingspan and just really athletic too. The athleticism was what jumped out to me. You know, you don't normally see guys coming from Belmont who have that level of athleticism. So I'm super excited for that. I think to me, he kind of reads more like less like Malik Brown and more like if Theo John was like a top tier athlete, you know, just like that super physical, like plays really hard kind of guy who's going to like grab every rebound he can get and just be an enforcer.
Yeah. We mentioned J-Rob earlier, man. Not a bad comp, really. Yeah, like, not a terrible comp here. Like a Justin Rob,
lanky.
Like 2020 J-Rob, like he's a bit, but I mean, junior, senior year, J-Rob was like, I mean, he was, you know, he was all right. He was all right.
I don't think he's going to be banking any threes for us.
No, but I mean, J-Rob was coming threes, in and getting blocks.
Will be banks. Like, if he does make threes, it will be a bank. Trust me. Like it will be off glass, I would imagine. But yeah, so those are our two right now, fellas. There's some more out there. Again, I don't want to get too much into it. I love the Graves kid. And if that matriculates, then like, obviously that's awesome. I think that's maybe more like a Cedric Coward situation, because the more that I look at his stuff, the more that I see, well, the more guys we get back, the more guys other programs get back. It's like, well, somebody's got to stay in this loaded draft here. If, I mean, it's hard not to fall in love with Graves, though. Like, it's really, I mean,
analytically, like, he's off the charts.
Yeah, right? 41% from three, can like mix it up, well, can like blitz your passing lanes, can hedge, can drop, can cover the rim, can like do whatever you want. He's young. He's a freshman, like he's an incoming sophomore. So it's like, there's a lot to love there. And I just think that at that size, that somebody's going to probably just snag that up. And
I mean, he has, on paper, at least he has zero weaknesses.
Yeah, you know, it's like
blocking shots, getting steals, 5%
steal rate and block rates. It's like, okay, like all over the offensive glass, doesn't turn the ball over at all. Like 41% from three, 70% from the line, 135 offensive rating, had 147 offensive rating in conference, which is just like Steph Curry range. Like that's just stupid, absurd. So I'm going to imagine that guy's going to be in the draft.
It's similar to the Coward situation last year, where Coward's stats just didn't even make sense, right? You're like, how did this dude shoot 70% from two over three straight seasons? Like,
right.
Obviously, an NBA team is going to take notice
while being a guard. Yeah. So, you know, if that happens to somehow matriculate, or if Kamboozer somehow says that he's coming back, we'll come on here and throw the biggest offseason party that you could probably throw, book our tickets, book our flights, do all of that stuff. But for now, fellas, let's not deal too much in the hypotheticals and what is a crazy time in college basketball. We'll be thankful for John Blackwell. We'll be thankful for Drew Charnowski. And we'll be incredibly thankful for Caleb Foster, Pat Gongba, Seabass, and hopefully Dame here. Obviously, Caden Boozer, but we covered him on our last podcast, not leaving him out. Love you too, Seabass. But fellas, I think if y'all are good, I'm good. Unless there's any kind of final shots for y'all, we can get out of here.
I was just going to say, appreciate, you know, all the listeners sticking with us through the off season now. You know, got an email from Kelly Clark out of Durham. Nice little email about, you know, just feeling the pain, the therapy session that we tried to give out there, after the tough loss. So, you know, hope you guys keep listening, keep enjoying it. If you got any suggestions for us, you know, last year we got the Jamie Lucky interview out of, a listener email. So send them to us.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We've had Eno Connor on the podcast talking about his book that he wrote for Coach K. We've had, you know, obviously John Shire has been on three times already. So we're going to continue to try to do that. We'll probably pivot very quickly into some draft and maybe some NBA talk as that starts to become a big thing. And then obviously once the roster is fully settled here, we'll do some more of that talk. But Roel, you got any final shots?
No, I'm glad you mentioned Kelly Clark there, because I think I was supposed to drop that in on a previous podcast and I forgot to edit it in. So nice. I felt bad about that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you, Kelly. Shouts to you. Shouts to the fam. Hope everything's going well. We're still recovering a little bit from UConn. I'm not really over it. I mean, Houston, UConn, that hurt the spirit in a pretty
might not ever get
way.
Over it, but
yeah, I'm really happy that we're reloading though, because I was kind of like looking, I was about to buckle up for just a 2016-ish kind of let's just go, like, kind of grind it out type of year.
You'd be happy to make the Sweet 16, right?
Like, yeah, it's like, which is fine, but we're loading up at a level now where it's like, now let's go chase this thing again. Let's go do it again.
I think it's gonna be the same collection of teams basically. And we're going to see that for a while going forward, right? Where when we're looking at the teams that are projected to be good next year, it's the same ones that were good last year. So it's you know, it's Michigan, it's Illinois, it's Florida.
Yeah. I mean, it has brought back, and we'll get out here very quickly, but it has sort of like taken some of the blue blood-ish kind of lore out of it, though. I mean, maybe I'm biased, y'all, but I think Duke has done a great job in still positioning themselves. But we've seen, you look around at some of these other blue bloods, and it's like the health that a Kentucky, the health that a Carolina, the health that a, you know, an Indiana, UCLA, where insert whatever. Or
maybe we're just getting new blue bloods, right?
Like yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
this in 10 years, like we'll be like looking back and be like Florida and Arizona are blue
Florida,
bloods.
Arizona, Michigan. UConn, yeah. Michigan, yep. Houston, right? Like yep. Those are kind of the teams that we're seeing year in and year out now. So maybe a bit of a shift. At the same time, though, you know, with the portal, I think everything is, we still need more data. We need more time absolutely. To see how these things are gonna work out. But all right, fellas, we'll get out of here. Again, shouts to Kelly, shouts to everyone else. Please, if you have anything, rate, review, subscribe. You can email us, thedevilstonpod@gmail.com. We appreciate you all. We will get back with some more content here shortly. In the meantime, though, let's keep the faces strong and the burn high.